Hi guys, this is Nadia Hilker. I'm playing Magna on The Walking Dead, and you guys are listening to The Walking Dead Talks Through. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I'm sending you all my love. Bye!
Hello, my name is Cassie McClincy. I play Lydia on The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. Yay!
Hey there, guys. I'm Callan McAuliffe, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register, and I play Lara on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, this is Ross Marquand, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Awesome.
Hey, survivors, welcome to episode 133 of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
Hey.
Yay.
We will be covering The Walking Dead season 11, episode 10, titled New Haunts. But first, we did get some feedback for the last episode, season 11, episode 9, No Other Way, which first I'm going to have to say that I apologize, Glennis. I even like said it last week where I was like, oh, if I missed anybody's feedback, but that was from we originally recorded back in October to be like, I apologize. And here it is. I like totally missed Glenn's feedback. And it was like that stupid Facebook like refresh. Like I remember it used to be like you could see when people were typing and it would just update while you're on that page. But now you have to like refresh. And I did not do that. And she had posted actually way before we like recorded. So really, really made me mad. So
thanks, Zuckerberg.
Yes. I blame Facebook or Meta or whatever it's called nowadays.
Meta.
Yeah. It's a stupid name. So, all right. Well, without further ado, let's go on to Glennis from Toronto's feedback for last week's episode. And she gave it a rating of 9 out of 10, Alexandria Walker's Waterworld. Awesome sauces were those walkers rising out of the water like Swamp Thing and going after Aaron must have given him extra chills that wasn't caused by the cold water in that basement. Maggie's fight for her life with the Reaper guy and then got blown up by the Hawacha arrow. And the smug face Carver got his just desserts dished out by Negan with that bell. Ding dong indeed. And then Maggie with that sickle type weapon after the standoff finished him off heartily. And then she goes into her feedback, and she says, Daryl has come full circle with not wanting to kill. There is a better way, echoes of Rick. In the past, Daryl was quick to kill that savior when Rick promised he'd be spared after providing some info, and also Daryl didn't hesitate when killing Morales. Both instances, Rick has taken aback by his behavior, and Daryl ended up letting Leah go, which will be interesting to see if we actually see her ever again.
That is correct.
I kind of, like, there was some talk about, you know, is this the last that we see of Negan? And not that Negan and Leah really had any kind of, like, connection or even really met each other. But I always thought that there's a whole comic book angle with, spoiler, if you've read the comics, and I'm not actually read this part of the comics, but I mean, it's like, I know that like he, like, Negan, you know, ends up meeting a woman and then they kind of go, and I think he met her in the Commonwealth. Am I correct? I don't know if you've read the comics all the way through, but I feel like it's like he ends up basically just going off and like kind of just restarting his life away from everybody else and just doing his own thing. But then I believe, was it Michonne? Or no, I can't remember exactly if it was Michonne or Rick or whoever goes and finds him and then sees that he's like, oh, he's basically, you know, not killing people and not doing anything and just let him be. So I don't think that's going to happen, but it was my thought of being like, okay, well, are we going to see Leah?
You never know.
Yep. All right, Glennis continues. She says, so Daryl should really understand where Maggie's killing spree is coming from. She's lost nearly all her people from the Reapers, so I don't blame her for killing those Reapers to appease for all the killing that those Reapers did. They didn't pause to spare anyone, with the exception of Leah not wanting to kill that one family. But she also deserves to be shot by Maggie, as she has flip-flopped too many times now to be trusted, and especially killing Pope and blaming it on Daryl. Yep. Negan is right to exit stage left, as it would have been only a matter of time before Maggie needed to make right with Negan. And the only way in her mind to make right it right would have to kill him. Hope we see more of Negan, though, as I think there was a gleam of respect starting to form between Maggie and Negan. Lydia has lost an ally, though, with being the only outsider left with Negan gone. True. Although she's made a lot of friends, so, and just kind of
that's true.
Built some respect with, you know, some of the things she's done. So, what a hero Gabriel was, killing that mad Reaper priest who was just trying to get Gabriel turned. Gabriel taking care of that Reaper sniper was gold. When Leah asked where Jensen was, and he replied, "No, just Jensen, just Gabriel." Great. Not the first time Maggie has to kill a walker that she considered a friend, as she had to kill Sasha and now Alden. True.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many pairs of eyes watching from that Alexandria Gate viewpoint, with Deanna, Rick, Carl, Jadis/Anne, Maggie, and now Carol was up there watching when Maggie, Gabriel, Elijah, and Daryl returned. The reunion between Daryl and Connie was heartwarming and nice to have the hugs between Daryl and Carol. All totally forgiven now with Connie back and alive and well. The reunion between Gabriel and Rosita struck me as strained. That was just strange. Then the Commonwealth soldiers arrive, much to Jerry's surprise. Yet another set of eyes on that Alexandria Gate sentry post. And Lance Hornsby and the range reminds me of a sneaky, stealthy, sleazy, too smooth of a car salesman type vibe. I wouldn't trust what he was trying to promote either.
Well, since we had to do with our Lance Hornsby and the range, doodle-doom, 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 that's just the way it is. Doodle-doom, doodle-doom, doodle-doom. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is.
That was awesome.
Well, I mean, every time you say Lance Hornsby, it ends up being his brother Bruce.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, continue on. And she says, so what the hell transpires to reach the spot outside Hilltop 6 months later, where yet another pair of eyes, this time Maggie, is looking daggers at a Commonwealth soldier and takes for his helmet and reveals for all people to be Daryl. Hey, Daryl, Mandalorians are not supposed to take their helmets off, as this is the way. Big smiley face emoji. And then she ends, how times have changed when Maggie, Jesus, and Daryl were plotting against Rick to get into Alexandria and have Negan killed. Now it looks as if Daryl has forsaken his friendship with Maggie for good. Careful, Daryl, you'll be added together with Negan onto Maggie's kill list. Don't think that that's where it's going to go.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. And maybe the thought from last episode could have given that, but now that we've seen this episode, I don't see that. That's too much of a big switch, you know.
Yeah, and I think they're going to explain.
Yeah.
Something I'm going to bring up later, something I noticed in the episode.
Okay. All right, well, we'll leave it at that. All right, thank Glennis, and you know, I've definitely got your feedback in for this week. So, and I promise that I will not try, you know, miss it.
Thank you, Glennis.
All right, well, next we actually got a voicemail from Renee with some comments, basically reaction to our podcast from last week. And I edited it a little bit because she also had some stuff about for this week. So it pretty smooth, but I'll just go ahead and play that now.
But I wanted to touch bases with some of the things y'all talked about last week's podcast when LT was saying that Maggie was becoming like Negan. I definitely do not agree with that. I said that in my post on last week, because Negan killed for entertainment. Negan has a messiah complex, and Negan bashed someone's head in with a freaking bat and his eye popped out. He bashed Abraham's face in front of everyone. Then he antagonized Rick and threatened to kill Carl, which I feel he would have killed Carl had Sheba the lion had not, you know, came in. But Negan, he just killed. He killed for sports. Negan burnt the doctor, Dwight's face, because he didn't want him. Dwight was upset about him messing with his wife. The doctor, he burnt him up, threw him in the fire. Maggie would never do that. Is she becoming like Rick? Yes. Rick, you know, all Rick at the end cared about was his family, which I would do the same thing. But like I said, Maggie killed because she had to. Negan killed just because. Negan had no reason to do a lot of things that Negan did. So I agree with Maggie. I would have shot them as well. I would, the young man, he wouldn't have had to tell me to shoot them. I would have shot them point blank period, because that's what they would have did to them. So no, I mean, I know it's kind of a gray area, but again, I feel like Maggie, Rick, Daryl, Carol, they kill because they have to. They have no other choice. Negan killed for sports. Negan took over everything. He took food from people. He did so many low down dirty things. I'm not even going to go back to before the apocalypse when he cheated on his wife with the best friend. I'm not even going to bring that up, even though I did bring that up. But yeah, Negan, no. I don't see it. I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree with that.
Thank you, Renee. I think what we were trying to make a point of with, not that necessarily she was going to be like that, she's Negan, but, you know, it's like she was taken. I guess just the similarities of just that gray space that, you know, like, you know, she's not killing for sport. She was killing to, you know, she's protecting her family, basically. You know, Negan kind of was doing a little bit more of like going the extreme. But I think in kind of his head, though, that he's was saying that he's like, I'm not, you know, as much different to you and what you did. But again, it's, you know, war, you know, it's like, he kind of, I guess you could say, maybe he committed war crimes compared to like what our people did. But then Rick is not also like perfect either. So, I mean, you know, he made some, you know, he rationalized things of the choices he made, you know, protect his family. But, you know, the people that he was going against would obviously like think that, you know, think differently. So, I don't know. You know, it's
there you go.
It is.
Like I said, we'll see how it all plays out.
No, that, yeah, for sure.
I just think that whatever else you want to say, I think that she has taken a bit of a dark turn, and we'll see how that works out.
Yeah. And then that's where it'll be like, well, yeah, is she taking that dark turn into the Negan territory, which was, yes, this is very, very dark and like also like, you know, yeah, wrong in our eyes, you know, like how he chose to do things, because really, bashing people's heads in and then taking pictures of them is not a great thing for a civilized, you know, or whatever you want to call it. But so we will see. All right. Well, then that leads us into this week's episode, season 11, episode 10, titled New Hunts, written by Magali Lozano and John Emile. Description by MC Plus. It says, our heroes experience Halloween in the Commonwealth. Daryl and Rosita undergo military training. All right, well, let's go into our ratings. I gave it a 7.9. Hey, I'm Jake from State Farm. And if you don't get that, because I was like, wasn't sure what to say, because I know some people already had like some great feedback. And it was when Daryl and Jake met each other when they were doing the whole whatever. Mercer's trial, or, you know, like stormtrooper training camp. So that,
hi, I'm Jake.
Yep. Jake from State Farm. All right, LT, what'd you give it?
Well, I gave this week's episode an 8 out of 10 Mayberry of the Apocalypse.
True that. And Brian, he gave it, I don't know. Well, actually, he says, I don't know what to think about this episode, but I didn't like it. I give this episode 6.5 The Commonwealth is freaking weird out of 10. It is weird. I think a lot of people kind of had the same thing. It was, well, we'll get into that.
Yep, we will.
All right, let's go into our listeners' ratings. All right, Dieta from Detroit, she says, I rate this episode 7 out of 10 trying to figure out this time jump to Halloween in the apocalypse.
Glenn from Toronto gives it a 7 out of 10, break a leg, stab an eye.
And Renee from Atlanta gives it a 5 out of 10. The Commonwealth is not what we thought. Eye roll, eye roll. Surprise, eye roll, eye roll. It never is. Thumb down emoji.
Yes. And Alma from Sacramento says, I felt this episode was slow, but it did give us a little more look into the Commonwealth. I give this episode a solid 7.
Nice. Good to hear from you, Alma. All right. Well, then that takes us into our awesome sauce. All right. First comes from Dieta from Detroit. She says, Mercer and Princess going to the Halloween ball for what looks like the uppity upper class people with money. Yeah. Definitely have that class system going on here.
Yes, it is nice to have a uptown kind of thing. Glenn Toronto says, nice moves. Rosita breaks a leg off from the walker and stabs the other walker in the eye.
Yeah, that was cool.
Well, next bit of feedback's from Megan from Williamsburg, Pennsylvania, and she says, Carol Sommelier Service, best wine selection this side of Bill's. And remember, this podcast is sponsored by Bill's Store, the best equipped store in the apocalypse, serving one location in Texas.
Yep. All right, next is Renee from Atlanta, and her awesome sauce is Judith looking all cute in her costume and her dress. Heart emoji, heart emoji. Aw. King Ezekiel and Carol rekindling their relationship, I think. Heart emoji, heart emoji. Gerald, Judith, and RJ. Heart emoji, heart emoji. Yeah, that was... Everybody's... Well, most everybody is hanging out in the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Seeing everyone living a life, or normal life, but, and I mean it's always a but in The Walking Dead, shrug, shrug emoji.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, that's all our listeners' awesome sauce, so let's go into ours. Brian actually gave some of his awesome sauce, and he said, I did like the tag team stuff. Yeah, that was cool. I did like, though, and it also was kind of like one of my, you know, or when I was rewatching and put my notes, I was like, well, okay, like seriously, Rosita and Daryl are like, they're not training as like new recruits. Like these should be like special forces. Like and they weren't like leaving their, you know, partners behind. Like it's just, they know how to like take care of stuff.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the difference between them and some of these other people, because, you know, you can tell. There are a lot of people in the Commonwealth who have not had to go through the same amount of, you know, fighting and trauma, right, as, you know, our crew has.
Yeah. Some of them, as far as we know, have like been there or even second generation. We don't know if like they've,
yeah,
how long this been, you know, and like they're, I mean, obviously I think the people that were there were pretty, probably, at least from just looking at it, it's like mid-20s or 20-ish, you know. It wasn't like there,
yeah,
was like...
Yeah, and it's that thing of they may be unaware as to how bad things are outside.
Right, right. Nope, that is for sure. There's a lot of that. But still, it's just like Mercer knows these people. It's like they're... Unless that's just kind of part of the deal. And then Brian goes on, he says, Daryl being astute enough to give Sebastian credit for apprehending Tyler Durden. I mean, Davis. Smiley face emoji.
Yep.
All right, LT, what'd you have?
Well, I started off with finally a bad guy we can all get behind hating. You know, no more of this. Well, Maggie's kind of gone bad. Well, Negan's kind of a good guy. Well, no, I'll never like Negan. Oh, I'll never hate Maggie. No, now we have a bad guy that we can all say, we hate this guy. Yes, Sebastian, we're talking about you. It was so funny because on Talking Dead, they interviewed the actor, and they it was just hysterical. Said, he's such a sweet guy, but I really hate his character. And that was, it was really nice to see him, you know, out of character on that, on the show. But yeah, his character, I'm pretty well think that we've got somebody that's right up there. You know, nobody had warm fuzzies for the governor. You know, nobody had warm fuzzies for some of these other people. I think that he's going to be our irredeemable, ugly bastard bad guy that we're all gonna not be able to stand.
Cheer when he dies, if he does.
Yep.
Yep, I agree.
Well, along with that, of course, you can't see the air quotes, but the advanced military training, I thought it was, you know, very, very butthead bad guy character of him to go through the, you know, our crew's weapon bags and go, hate it, sucks, hate it, hate it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that once again, you know, Daryl does what Daryl does, and he's going, you know, sees him struggling. He goes, eh, shook, and puts the bolt right in the zombie's grape there. And I said, that's a very Daryl thing to do.
Yeah. Yep. And then Sebastian gets all miffy, like, wait, he's like, you know, why'd you do that? Like, I handle
I
it.
I had it. It's like, right.
Well, and then it was like, then to see him when mommy turned around, or like he sees her and then basically storms off, like to go with her. It's like, whatever.
Well, that's just one of those things that we can expect more out of him. I had awesome sauce of, yes, Princess and Mercer looking all cute and coupley together, because it's kind of funny that I think that she's not like anybody he's had to deal with up to this point. And so maybe he is kind of attracted to somebody who's not just going to be, oh, Mercer, you're so dreamy. So I'm kind of interested to see where that story goes. Absolutely enjoyed Carol being Carol in so many ways, because you're seeing not only, this is like the synthesis of Cookie Bacon Carol and Sneaky Carol. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that she was, you know, she did her little thing in the hospital, which I'll probably complain about later. The way that she saw her in with Hornsby, and just the fact that, you know, Carol is the most dangerous woman in the Commonwealth.
Or actually in The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Because the biggest thing is she's always just one gut poncho, you know, gun tirade away from being all Terminus Terminator again. So, Carol is just still one of my favorite characters, even though they've written some things I didn't necessarily love how her character was progressing. She always comes back and, you know, gives us what we want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
I've got this list in Awesome Sauce that we finally get to see Pamela Milton, and we kind of start seeing the big picture of how life in the Commonwealth is. That if you think about Alexandria, it was still pretty much, we're all in this together, and I'm in, like, with Rick or whoever the council is, you know, and I'm just in charge to help smooth things over and make things go. But it's sort of in the Commonwealth, we're seeing that there really is a class division, that you have this sort of have and have not thing going on. And I mean, it works, but, you know, how well is it working? But I did think it was cool that we finally got to see her and kind of got to get a better feel of the way things are going.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And also threw it in my awesome sauce is that this time it isn't our guys, you know, providing the rebellious, seamy underbelly of a community. Because, I mean, think about it. They dealt with the governor, and what happened? Our guys were immediately the dissension that busted the community up. When Rick and company got to Alexandria, then Rick ends up taking over. It just seems like when Maggie got to the hilltop, she ended up taking over. It just seems like that our heroes end up, you know, subverting whoever's in charge when they get there and ending up in charge. So it seems like this time with the Commonwealth, there's already something going on, and we're just going to see how they play into it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's for sure, because it's like it has usually been from that kind of point of view, or like that kind of side where it's like, okay, it's our people. Mm-hmm. They meet this community. They somehow are the one, you know, and they end up being kind of the ones that like kind of start making it fall, or, you know, or like causing issues that cause it to fall. But yeah, this one's like, hey, the Commonwealth has been around for since the beginning, and they're just coming in, you know. Well, we'll see how it plays out for sure. Because we're getting, yeah, I have to agree with, like you gave a lot of points, and I know a lot of listeners kind of give a little bit of the same points, basically, and that's why I didn't really put it in my awesome sauce. But it is,
right,
like, you know, not that it's surprising, you know, and it's, we were kind of expecting it, but, you know, to, we're now seeing exactly like kind of what, like, okay, this is what the Commonwealth is and like how it's set up with the class and all, right, that, you know, with there's, you know, like this whole, I mean, Pamela Milton, it's like she's, Sebastian's obviously a little spoiled little brat, but it's like, she's like, this is what happens when someone's been in power for that long and control basically seems to like,
right,
be one of their founders, you know, and it's just all corruption and like, you know, pull the wools over your eyes. So it is, I like enjoying like seeing this, and we'll just see how it plays out. Well, I didn't, like I said, I was like a lot of everybody kind of already had some of the same stuff and just some of the comments. You know, it's like I just picked some fun things, and, you know, it was like watching, Tyler Davis, like basically slash the painting of what Pamela Milton's dad that she was all trying to show off or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to see that, because, you know, he was kind of trying to like, hey, you know, everything's not as great. Like, look what happened to me. And then it was just kind of like, here's his like middle finger to her, you know, and basically like, you know, you're, you know, just, this is not what the Commonwealth is, you know. It's like, it's still oppressive. And like, you know, I mean, he was a soldier and then did something wrong, and now he's like waiting tables. So it was fun to see him do that.
Yeah, and they didn't have a building to throw the painting off of.
Yeah, no. Nope, they didn't. And then into the resistance thing, I thought it was fun to see at the end, like Rosita, when she found the resistance room.
Right.
And then that's the song that was playing, and Judith, like, you know, basically it was the song that Judith was playing that she got from her friend, and it was Motorhead. But of course they were playing, you know, and then they were like the lyrics, they do this a lot, you know, on the show, obviously, but it's like, it's Motorhead, and he's like, or it's like the lyrics are like, come on, baby, eat the rich. And, you know, I thought it was fun to see that juxtaposition, when here we see Judith being like, oh, here's a song, you know, or like this record, which is something new to her. I mean, I know they had records in Alexandria, but I'm sure it was like very limited, or, you know, not one song, or maybe kid songs. So she was like enjoying this like little kind of like moment that she got from her new friend, May. And then here we are seeing Rosita kind of, you know, doing her job, and then seeing that there's like, oh, this resistance room, and that was the song that was playing, you know, and it was, yeah, like,
it was after she got into that room and she's looking through all the posters and things, it was, you know, again, props to the acting, mm-hmm, that she had that look on her face. It's like, what am I seeing?
Yeah, right.
What like, is going on here?
Yeah. Well, and then just a side note on this, though, too, is like, if I remember correctly, like, May, the new girl that was befriending Judith, like, told her that she had to get that record and that it was so good. And I'm reading maybe more into it, or I don't know, you know, they played it at the end and that was like, you know, that was that record. And it was like, okay, well, is May like part of the resistance?
There is more than one cut on that album, sir.
No, true. But it's like that they showed us what they showed us. So it's kind of like, that's where I'm trying to make this connection.
It could be B-side track four that May loves so much.
True. Well, then that's the other part of it, too. It was like, or is she just like one of the upper class listening to like this rebel music, you know, because they think it's so, you know, it makes them cool. And, you know, like,
well, and come on, it's a theme from preteens and teens,
right?
You know, get some loud, thrashy music that you know your parents can't stand,
right? Right,
of course, with Judas living with Uncle Daryl, I don't know what Daryl listens to, so.
No, true. Or they just listen to whatever everybody else is blaring.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was just a fun little scene at the end and the little like kind of like just juxtaposition between those two peoples and scenes.
Yep.
So I thought it was cool. All right. Well, then that was all of our awesome sauce. Thank you, listeners. So let's go into our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
And we got one weak sauce from Dieta from Detroit, and she said, Daryl and Rosita are living like peasants in the ghetto. They had loud neighbors, crying babies, and loud music. Where did they get a music system from in the apocalypse? Maybe one of them was practicing their DJ skills for a job with the Commonwealth? Well, they had lots of time to scavenge. And
well, if you notice, those are good old school, you know, 33, 45, 78 non-stereo portable record players.
Yeah, that's...
It makes me want to put my old guy hat on, and it's like, that's right, kids. They're flat vinyl discs with grooves in them, and you have to have a needle. I mean, I realize vinyl's making a resurgence, but it's still... It's a record.
Yeah, yes. They used to have those. They were back before the what do you call it? The like wax cylinder.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Dieta. All right. Well, let's go into our weak sauce. I didn't have any, and Brian did. And you want to just take his and then go into yours?
I shall. Brian says, it was a really weird vibe there. It wasn't what I expected, and I'm not sure that I like it. Okay, I didn't like it.
I
think that's probably the overarching Commonwealth.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's kind of like, I mean, I got the weird vibe, but it kind of fit with like, okay, yeah, we didn't think this place was going to be like this is perfect utopia. It was like, I expected to have some weirdness or what's going on. And I think we got a lot of showed us.
Well, my weak sauce is I went into and sort of something that Dieta said is I was going to the workers' tenement / apartment building. I'm just going, okay, so you've basically got this town that you've settled in, you've taken over, and it just seems like so... Where did you find the crappy apartments to keep that would be close? You know, I just am wondering why we're making it such a big division when, if you think about Alexandria, everybody had a house. Mm-hmm. And there might have been multiple people living in a house, but you still had them in a house. One of the other questions I have is, so who thought it was a good idea to leave the kids and have them go live with Uncle Daryl? Now, before I get another voicemail to start next week's podcast, I'm not saying that Daryl's not going to take care of Judith and RJ. I'm just saying, of all the people you expect that they would go live with, I just didn't see them going to live with Daryl.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes you question or add a question. It's like, well, then why was that? You know, it's like Carol could have taken him, you know, and she's in a much nicer area, you know, like King Ezekiel could have. But I wonder if they were assigned or, you know, or something like that.
Or maybe they wanted to, maybe Judith was like, I want to go live with Daryl. So,
but does she have a choice? That's the question.
Well, it's true. So the next thing I have is back to Mr. Davis. So how did, you know, Mr. Splinter Trooper wannabe painting slasher manage to get into the party? Is the Commonwealth big enough that somebody can basically walk in somewhere and not be recognized? You know, it just seems like to me that everybody kind of knows everybody, and there's, you know, enough people around that they have a good sized worker base, but not so many that you have a great deal of anonymity.
No, true. But I think though, I think he, but he was working there. So I think
that, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm saying if you have a fixed size community, somebody early on would have go, you know, the guy with the hors d'oeuvre tray over there looks a lot like the guy that just got kicked out of the troops.
Or, I'm just saying,
it just kind of struck me wrong that are there enough people that you can not be noticed or known by somebody?
Yeah, we're right. I mean, because I mean, it's like the soldiers would be training and people would see him be like, oh, that's so, you know.
Yeah. And you can't tell me that everybody in there in upper class town would not know some of the people that live in town. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like back when I was a kid and I decided, you know, at age 6, I wanted to be a super spy. And I made what I thought as a 6-year-old was an incredible disguise. But Mom figured out it was me very quickly for some reason, mainly because there were just two of us in the house at the time. And a strange short man in a trench coat and a hat would sort of stuck out to her. But like I said, it just makes me think that, you know, somebody would have recognized him before all this kicked off. Mm-hmm. My other weak sauce is just a logistical one based on my experience. So after Sebastian drags him back in there and shows him to Mom that he caught the bad guy, nobody really said, so Sebastian, when did you start carrying handcuffs?
Yep.
And just like I said, from my personal experience, you know, my handcuffs that I carried for many, many years, are mine. They're my personal property. I had a set issued to me, but I had a set that I really liked that were mine that I carried. So now Daryl doesn't have any. It's not like they're going to look at him and go, hey, these are Dixon's handcuffs.
Yeah. Like, isn't that, you would think that they were like, okay, you're going to work today. Okay. Here's issuing your cuffs.
Yeah. But for Mr. Bad Guy, it's like, you know, with Sebastian, it's like, doesn't seem to be the sort of thing that angry, drunk, privileged frat boys carry with them on a daily basis. So, and I guess the other thing I had as weak sauce was the absentees. So that we got the first thing on the screen was 30 days in the Commonwealth. And so we saw Jerry and Jerry's kids and Jerry's wife and Ezekiel and Judith and RJ and Daryl and Carol and Rosita and Gabriel. So the question I had is, so where's Eugene? So we got the teaser part where we kind of know Maggie's not there, but it's like, where's Aaron?
Right. Yeah.
You know, where are all the people that we expect to be there that aren't there?
Yeah. No, I had the same question, like, and I like put it in like later in notes though, but I mean, I'm bringing it up now because it was like, you know, okay, this episode here is 30 days. Yeah. We were like, okay, where's Aaron? You know, and I put that actually wrote that in my notes. I'm like, okay, well, I figure he would be at least walking around the background or something or like being waved. But,
or the writers could have at least done a, you know, thrown in a throwaway line, as we have mentioned in the past. The, you know, wow, these cookies are really great. Too bad Eugene's, you know, shoveling crap at the stable this weekend. You know, something to kind of, you know, throw the audience a bone as to where these other people are.
Well, actually, I think they might have, but not to all of them, because there was a point in the beginning of the episode where, King Ezekiel asked Carol, was like, how's Maggie and Lydia doing? And she was like, oh, they're fine. And then later, when Daryl and Judith are talking in the apartment or whatever, he goes on, like, they were talking about, it's like, do you want to stay here? And he said, even when Alexandria gets all cleaned up. And so we know Maggie's not there, but then that's where I was like, oh, okay, well, that to me was like kind of a big, like, I didn't put in my watts or anything like that.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just.
But yeah, no, it leaves to like, okay, well, so is there this cleanup going on? Like, so.
Right. It wasn't something that really jumped out at me. So maybe the assumption is Aaron is working at Alexandria since he had his Commonwealth Home Depot run. And hopefully he can be, you know, doing some work over there.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see, because if that's somehow that's not the case, then we'll be like, oh, okay, well, there's some continuity issues because you said this and then that's not what happened. Anyways, yeah, I don't know. That's still a big question.
Yep. But that's all I got, man.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't really have anything for my weak sauce. So, well, let's just get into our what sauce.
What?
All right. Well, we got one from Megan Lehman from Williamsburg. And she actually had two what sauces. She said, what sauce number one? Who thinks it's a good idea to traumatize children with severe PTSD by sending them through a zombie haunted house? Yes. Agreed.
That would be Angela Kang.
Yes. And what sauce number two? How the heck do they have mangoes? That's a tropical fruit. I mean, it's kind of, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that
they have a greenhouse.
No, true. But it is kind of interesting that, like, okay, well, we know that there's like this class system and there's the haves and the have-nots, or, you know, like levels. So Pamela Milton likes to throw these parties and celebrate. And then she's like, you know, as we saw in this episode, she wanted just like good wine. And she, you know, so of course she wants the best food for these, her parties, you know. And
well, maybe they went to the coast, or, you know, maybe Bill's has a branch in Virginia.
They could get it. Totally possible.
Just, well, and like I said, I just went with the greenhouse thing because I'm sure that there's probably somebody out there who can tell me all about the growing of mangoes. But I know that there have been some greenhouses around here that raised like aloe plants and, mm-hmm. you know, things that are not native to this part of North Carolina. So I can't say it's outside the realm of possibilities. I don't know. Did they have canned mangoes? I mean, were they fresh mangoes? I mean, I can't tell you. I wouldn't, you know.
Right. No, right. And I, you know, we were just getting the comment of them and then that, like, start getting this food ready.
Yep.
So it's like, and It makes me wonder, though, too. It's like, okay, is there kind of like, oh, there's some stuff that is only for the elites, and that's not something you can go buy in the store, or like is given as an option, you know, like it's well, held
that's,
back.
That's, again, that's also quite possible.
Well, that's, we will see for sure.
Well, it's not like, you know, it's not like they've got a packet steamer that's making trips to South America to pick things up. So.
Well, no, and you're right, because I mean, that's kind of what some of the stuff that we are looking at doing down here in Southern Illinois is, if we had a greenhouse or like a hoop house and we have a setup for to be able to try to grow stuff indoors, that we wanted to have a lemon tree so we could grow lemons, because that's not something you can really grow out here, just outside. But we could totally grow it indoors. So, correct. You know, they could definitely have like a whole, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's the farm section that has like some, you know, hoop houses and stuff like that. And they're able to grow a lot more other varieties. It's just a matter of like, where do you get those seeds? Where do you get that to be able to grow them this long into the apocalypse? Unless they already have
well,
them.
Again, again, the fact that I don't know much about the cultivation of, say, bananas or plantain or mangoes or any of those tropical more type fruits and vegetables. But I know, and again, just stick it where I grew up. It's like, I know that if you have potatoes, you grow more potatoes from potatoes you've grown.
Yep.
And if you grow corn, you can grow corn from the corn you've grown. And, you know, there are ways to do seeds for the common fruits and vegetables that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's probably a way to do it for other tropical type fruits.
Yep.
I mean, come on, you're the farm guy. You should know all this.
Yeah, I don't grow trop. I'm growing peppers. But no, you're right. I agree.
I totally agree that they are exotic and unusual.
Yep.
And of course, we're totally overthinking it. But that's what we do.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Megan. All right. You want to take Renee?
Renee from Atlanta says, Sebastian needs his behind kicked, not kissed, which is what everyone seems to be doing because he's Pamela's son. I'm not happy with this plot line at all. And she has two cuss face emojis. Daryl should not have let him take credit for capturing Tommy. I can't stand spoiled, entitled people who think everything revolves around them. And of course, she also echoes the previous thing. Why would they have a haunted house with real zombies and allow the kids to be terrorized by them? And Uncle Daryl was okay with it nonetheless. Judith and RJ looked terrified. I was not happy with that scene either. More cussing faces. And see, once again, was Uncle Daryl the best choice? I stand by my earlier statement, sir.
All right. Nice. Thank you, Renee, for your what sauce.
Thank you.
All of our listeners' what sauce, so let's go into ours. And I'll just put it just because this got brought up and get mine out of the way. But it's like, yeah, I totally agree with the haunted house. And it's like, and it was kind of a weird scene to see, because I was just like, why would that have been fun, you know, for Judith and RJ? And also, like, why was Daryl kind of being involved with it? Because it's like, it's been 6-7 months, or well, we don't know when that flashback with Maggie and Daryl due to face off. So this is a few months after surviving a storm and a breach and like dealing with rockers and being in the right. basement full of water. And like, you know, they've lived their life like basically always like feeling threats and like killing zombies and then running from them. So it was kind of like, oh, why go into that? And why would that have even been a thought to do? You know, we can get the Commonwealth people who've basically been mostly sheltered, you know, to the people that have been there. So it's like, oh, this is fun, haunted house. But for them, it's like, that's still traumatizing. You know, it's like you just literally like had to fight your way out of a waterlogged basement, barely getting by, you know, out. You know, it's so, yeah, I don't know. I agree. It was kind of like, yeah, that was weird.
Well, yeah, but it also shows the disconnect between people outside and people inside.
Yeah. That, no, true. Very true. Because that also happened with May, which was like, yeah. She what asked Judas, like, oh, you were out there, like, out in the wasteland. Like, oh my gosh, like, nothing must scare you. And it was like, well, yeah, she's not little shit cooker for nothing.
That's right.
All right. You want to take the rest?
I will. And of course, the fact that we were talking about the haunted house is a perfect segue into our own Brian's Hot Sauce, who says Pamela Milton being out of touch. It sounds like leaders from our day, but why would she be? And I think the perfect answer to that is, you know, she's managed to build this community and help lead these folks. And they kept saying they want it to be like it was. So whenever you run into somebody who's big on nostalgia, that's why it ends up being the post-ZA Mayberry. She wants it to be like it was. So they still, and if she was a politician, if her dad was like the president, I think that's what they said, or the governor or somebody important, then of course you're going to have formal balls and you're going to have this, you know, stratification of the smart people and the working people, because that's the way it is. That's the way it was. We want to build back to that. You know, as opposed to what we've already said, you know, something practical so that everybody can get along.
Yep. The old world, or yep, the way it was. Not quite.
So then we go into my hot sauce. And of course, my hot sauce has to lead off with, of course, Carol finds the one perfectly sealed, unmolested wine cellar in the apocalypse. As we've said so many times, when they manage to find something that is untouched and fairly pristine, even though everything else has been picked over and scavenged and torn up, well, you know, Carol's such a super stealthy investigative ninja that she can find this wine cellar that happens to have 6 to 8 bottles of this particular old vintage that's just sitting there waiting for somebody to get it. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Nope.
And I had to bring up, as a hot sauce, you know, our girl Stealth Carol, that, you know, she goes into the hospital. She managed to find the janitor, does the little bump snatch and steals his keys. Wanders around the hospital long enough to find the records room without having any attention brought to her. Goes through the keychain and figures out which key opens the door without attracting any attention. And gets inside, and when she's inside and she's discovered, it happens to be the one person that works in the hospital that would not call security on her.
Yep.
I mean, is it a coincidence? I don't know. But yeah, that was the part where I mean, to go back and say I enjoyed that part of the story, I'm just saying that was, you know, from a gamer perspective, she's rolling a lot of natural 20s on those checks. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, that's perfect. No, seriously.
Nobody is that lucky.
Yeah.
And like I said, just from my perspective, back in the days when I was playing Splinter Cell, yeah, I felt like I was pretty good at the game, and even I wasn't that lucky doing that, being sneaky. So this was just...
It was like a perfect, like, just perfect. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be perfect. But it's still... it's always that thing that little logical LT will come up and go, well, you know.
Yes, and that's what's...
What are the odds? And I said, incredibly astronomical.
Well, right, because it's like, okay, like we're supposed to think that the Commonwealth is like this kind of a big place with lots of people. So, like, do they only have this one hospital that only has Yumiko's brother as like the head surgeon or something? You know, it's like
we don't know. We don't know. He's the only thoracic surgeon, but again, it still goes back to how big of a community are we talking about?
Right, right.
You know, it still goes back to my thing of when we were talking about Mr. Stabby Slasher. Are there enough new people coming in that somebody wouldn't go, hey, aren't you the new girl? You work at the bakery. What are you doing here?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I just like this because it's the opposite of why didn't anybody recognize him is that why didn't anybody not recognize her? You know, like I said, is the Commonwealth big enough that they're getting this steady stream of new people? So new people will just show up and you'll go, oh, I don't think I've ever seen them before.
Right, right.
Or is it just, well, it's just people I don't recognize.
Nope. No, good point. True, because it is, you're making a good point, even though they played this off just for the show to be like, oh, yeah, of course, Carol. That's Carol, sneaky Carol.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, if you're... how big is this place? Because this is not like living in a big giant city. It's not living in Chicago or New York. It's like where you just ignore people.
Let's just think about pond size here for a moment. It's like Alexandria. You couldn't do that because pretty much if there was a new person in town, you would go, I don't know you.
Right.
But like you said, if it's, I mean, not even New York. Let's just say a larger size town. You're not going to know everybody. So unless they're going somewhere where there's only certain people going, you wouldn't think anything of seeing somebody you didn't recognize milling around in the hospital.
Right.
So the question is, at where does the Commonwealth fall in all this? You know, is it super huge? Is it, you know, really, really big? I mean, not to go too far astray on this, but it's like CRM. The Civic Republic is pretty big. So in some places, like if you went to the hospital in the Civic Republic, yeah, you might be able to walk around and nobody would know you from Adam's house cat, and they wouldn't know if you'd been there a week, a month, a year. But like I said, in a smaller community, you get into the more likely to be noticed for either being somebody you know or someone you don't know.
No, agreed. I was kind of wondering if we even were told what the population was.
I don't think we had been.
No, I think that might have been, yes, CRM-ish or from Fear or whatever, mm-hmm. that we might have gotten mm-hmm. some numbers, but not from the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have, sir.
Alrighty, well then, that goes into our sad and aw sauce. All right, well, the first sad and aw sauce comes from Renee from Atlanta. She's got several. She says, Judith asking for something as normal as an allowance. Cry, little tear face. Yep. King Ezekiel putting on as if he's not feeling under the weather. I'm not going to be a happy camper when he dies. Bawling face emoji. Yeah. I don't think that's definitely something. Well, I don't know. They can change things up. We know that Carol's trying to move him up on the line, but.
Right.
So he could. I'm not sure if he dies in the comic or not, but.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
He died at the Pikes. During the Whisper War.
Okay. Well, they've changed
his
things.
His head was on a pole. Mm.
Well, then he could still maybe survive the TV show.
We don't know.
No, we don't. She goes on, Tommy telling the story of how he was demoted and how he couldn't help his family anymore. Cry, or angry face. Because the Commonwealth does not care about common people. She's like, no pun intended. Facepalm. Well.
Yeah, there is that.
Yep. Are people realizing the Commonwealth is not what they thought it was, which I really don't believe they were really believing Mayberry was all hunky-dory anyways. Shrug emoji. I don't think they thought it was all hunky-dory, but they... Well, I mean, we'll see. Because I know there's, at least in this episode, there was a bit, a few here and there that was just like, oh, wow, is this really all it's been? And kind of believing that what they were being fed. Like Jerry, yeah. Who's got his wife and kids, and, you know, it's like they were having Halloween. It's like, you know, he even, like, yeah. So it's like, well, some. Hey,
they did get the Lance Hornsby. Giving them the speech about, you know, come on down to the Commonwealth. We have stuff and houses and things and food. And
yeah, and that also then puts in the question that we've seen before with our Yumiko and Eugene and Princess, where they put them through all this, like, interrogation and, like, you know, I mean, they were trying to find out who they were, but, like, is there not kind of a process of, like, how they let people in and being like, oh, here's the rules?
I'm glad you brought that up. What I'm thinking is, because the three of them were on foot and out wandering, is why I think that they got the treatment that they did. See, I'm thinking that since the Commonwealth sent basically an envoy to Alexandria, then I think that the rules for them coming to the Commonwealth were different, because it was contact with an established community. It's not just these three mooks wandered in out of the,
right,
you know, apocalyptic wilderness and were poking around asking questions.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. And that's kind of like why they were also then trying to basically get the information about where's your community, who are you with. Yeah. You know, it's like whatever, right. Which they ended up getting from Eugene, and then that led to that. So.
Right, and I think that they probably still may have had some sort of in processing that why Ezekiel is basically, you know, zookeeping again, mm-hmm. and Carol's making cookies at the bakery, and why Rosita and Daryl ended up getting into the security program.
Yep. Nope. True. All right. Well, then she goes into her own sauce eye, too cute sauce. And she says, Princess flirting with Mercer and telling him, oh, that's definitely your type of thing. Paraphrasing, because I can't remember verbatim. I just know it was super cute. She's like, kiss face. And Ezekiel and Carol all snuggly. Another kiss face. Yeah.
Indeed. So we've got a little bit from Megan from Pennsylvania, and she said, Princess looks absolutely gorgeous without her comic book costumey outfit. A natural beauty. And indeed, I will agree that yep. she looked kind of nice when she was wearing, like, regular, not, you know, she wasn't wearing her tank girl outfit.
Yeah. And she didn't have, like, yeah, like the wig.
Yeah. The big shag carpet coat and all the other stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah, she's adjusted well. So that's, I guess, one thing you have to say. All right. Well, that was all of our listeners' sad and aw sauce. So let's just go into ours. Brian starts off, he says, the squalor they all seem to be living in while Daryl and Rosita are in training. I have to believe that there is some truth to what that dude said. Which, yep. I'm assuming the dude is
Tyler Durden.
Tyler Durden, yep.
So for mine, my little bit of sad and all sauce was, you know, Carol and Ezekiel sitting on the couch together again, that I was like, oh, and just the way that even though they fell away from each other, the fact that they still, I think, have feelings for each other. And it just was just kind of a, aw, because we don't know what's going to happen to Ezekiel. And I'm like, and I'm looking at you there, Kang. We know that Ezekiel's, you know, sick. So it would be a really crappy thing for you to do to Carol to have them get all snuggly and cuply again and then have him die.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Kang. I'm looking at you, Gimple. And along those lines, is it just me or does it seem like Ezekiel is giving away some of his prized possessions that have a lot of memories associated with them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gave Carol back the jewelry box. He gave, you know, Jerry's son, you know, Shiva's collar and her chain. So it just seems like that, you know, that's one of those behaviors that you know.
Yeah, when you know.
Either you're going to die or something bad's going to happen. So I really, really hope they don't pay that off. But it just, knowing the way that they sort of ham-fistedly drop things from time to time, I think this is kind of a case of Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
I think that they're giving this away. You know, he's giving this stuff away because he kind of knows, no matter how much of a fierce face he's putting on, you know, he kind of knows that he's not in the best of shape.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that kind of would then be like, maybe, you know, he knows and he's just not saying, you know, or was saying it out loud to anybody, that, you know, he knows that he's in a long line and that his time is short. Yeah, that's interesting too, because I didn't quite necessarily pick up on that as being like, you know, what he was doing. But now that definitely makes sense, because it is like, you know, he did give Shiva's collar, you know, I thought how cute that was. And I put that in my side sauce because I was like, oh, you know, that's cute. That's cute. That was nice, because I kind of felt it was like them having their, almost not necessarily like reminiscing, but like, you know, like, you know, back in the kingdom days, you know. And it was like,
yeah,
you know, he's given Shiva's collar to Jerry's son, who, you know, he was telling his son, like, oh, he's a hero of, you know, the kingdom. He saved us, yeah. Or he, you know, saved this.
And so it's so one of those things of a shared memory that they can go, you know, your dad was my main man back when, yep, I was the king.
Yeah.
You know, your dad is a heck of a guy. Because, like I said, it just the symbolism of it.
Yeah. No, and then that's kind of what I was thinking, too, where it's like, oh, you know, it was like, it just felt like this, you know, they're sharing their stories, so like, especially with, you know, when you do that with your children or the next generation, when you're like raising them and be like, oh, these are like, this is the community we belonged with, you know. And I felt like it's like, oh, this could be like a tale that would be told to like the families of their generation, you know, the next generations, are like, oh, back in the kingdom, we had this wonderful leader, king, you know, doing all that. And then, you know, he got a little piece of, you know, that the son did.
It's the way, and two, it's a way of trying to reestablish some family history, because we all have things. It's like, oh, my great granddad's pocket watch, or, you know, my mom's jewelry or something like that. That this is, you know, it's like that. So that the next generation understands that, you know, they're not just refugees living in a strange place.
No, right. Totally. Yeah. I mean, but like from what you were saying though, too, is like, well, then we get to the other hand, then it's like Ezekiel and Carol are at her apartment and he gives her the box of Henry's stuff. That's what that box was, you know? And then it was like, you know, I was necessarily not connecting. It's like, oh, he's like kind of passing on stuff because he knows that he's possibly not going to live that much longer. But that then also makes sense. It's like, well, yeah, that's like he's giving this stuff away, trying to make, you know, his like little little connections or just like nice stuff to be like, remember me, you know, or like, oh, here's the stuff, like, you know, doing nice things because he knows that I'm not going to be around to carry this stuff with me. So I'm going to give it away.
That's right.
So yeah, it's all sad because I don't want King Ezekiel to disappear. We'll see. I mean, we'll see what Kang wants to do. Also, it would be kind of weird. Not, I guess it's not necessarily weird. It's just kind of like not the way that we're used to having people go out. They're usually like either
right.
fighting at a war or trapped in a, you know, or, you know, in what's his face? This way, you know, Maggie basically like locks the door and lets the walkers eat him. But yeah, we'll see. The only other sad thing was just, you know, I felt there was a lot of wine that was lost in this episode. Like the wine that you like ordered from that totally untouched, unmolested wine cellar. And then the right. walker, of course, goes through and knocks over this that shelf must have been really and sturdy. I'm going,
not the wine rack.
Right. And it's like that gets all destroyed. But then also, when
covert Samantha, the Pamela's assistant, brings Lance Hornsby the big box of wine and he chucks it in the trash can, those poor bottles of Boone's Farm and Two Buck Chuck that got thrown in the trash can and broken.
No, totally. Right. And it's like, and it's just kind of like, okay, well, just no one, like, so how much waste is going on? You know, because it was like, they're perfectly fine bottles of wine. They just didn't want those. So it's like, you would just chuck those. And it's like, it's okay. Like,
come on, man. Pre-apocalypse vintage, even if it's in a screw top bottle, is a close commodity.
No, seriously. That could be worth something to somebody you're meeting down outside and being like, hey, I'll give you some wine. And then it could be the worst thing. And they'll be like,
because we're not talking about some, you know, some bootleg hooch you made in the kitchen. You know, we're talking about real production wine here.
Well, a lot of it was wasted this episode, so that made me sad. All right, that was all that I had for Sad and Oz, so let's go into our feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right, well, we have the other part of Renee from Atlanta's voicemail, and then I'll, you know, we'll go into what her feedback that she wrote in the Facebook group. So I will just go ahead and start with the voicemail first.
Hi guys. This is Renee from Fairburn. I'm calling in. I mentioned it on the podcast on the Facebook page, but I'll mention it again. I am fasting right now until Resurrection Sunday. So I'll be calling in. I'll be making phone calls strictly. I can't interact with anyone on Facebook. I'm going to miss you guys. I'm going to miss Dieta. I'm going to miss seeing Glennis post. Oh, I look forward because Glennis, she really breaks things down. So I'm really going to miss everybody. Alma. Yep. But hey, you guys will hear me. I just want no, well, I'll hear you guys on the podcast, what you have to say on the podcast. But yeah, I just, Stephanie, I didn't mention that. I think that she's part of the resistance because she said, I'm one of you guys or I'm just like you or something like that. I mean, she could mean that she doesn't have money like them, like, the upperclassmen, but upper class people. But, I think that she means she's part of the resistance. And I know they didn't say her name is Stephanie, but I, for one, think that's Eugene Stephanie. And, Mercer, OMG, he is fine, fine. Fine. And Mercer, I think Mercer kind of going to be, you know, maybe with the resistance as well as Princess can get a hook to him. I think if he's not already part of the resistance, classism at the Commonwealth, I'm definitely not happy with that. I hope they go through this super quick because, I mean, I feel like there's better things that we could be doing, like finding out where Rick Grimes is and Michonne. You know, like I said, Rick, I'm missing Rick. I'm missing Rick because a lot of lines that people have in the show, to me, it would have went down much better had it been Rick, you know, doing it or saying it or whatever. I feel like I can tell where
they replace somebody else with what Rick would have been doing. And it, I'm not happy with it. You know, I want them to fast forward, get to the part where we can find Rick Grimes and what the hell is going on with Rick Grimes. And again, with the classism, I feel like when you start throwing isms in the mix, it then comes racism, sexism, all of that stuff start happening. And so far, we have not had to deal with that. And for me, it's so jarring to see it in the Commonwealth that I just don't believe that Daryl, Carol, Rosita, none of our people will fall for that. They're not, you know, we're different ethnicities. You know, we have blacks, we have whites, we have Asians, we have gay, we have straight, and we all mix together. You know, we're a plethora of people and we all mix together. We don't look at any of that. But, you know, to me, that's definitely a gray line. When you start throwing in any type of ism, I mean, you know, other ones stop popping up. So it's just jarring for me to see this. It really is. You know, with the money, it's just, I want them to fast forward because I just don't want them to get in that area in The Walking Dead. I know we have to, you know, because I know this, we have to start the real world again, but I just don't like it. So I hope they fast forward, you know, and get past this really, really quick. And, you know, I just want, yeah, that's it. But okay, talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thank you, Renee, for your voicemail, as always. We love hearing from you. Definitely, you know, we know that you're going to be taking some time off of the social media, so definitely send in those voicemails, because we definitely want to hear from you each week. You're totally correct that they've been making adjustments because normally if they were following comic book, which they do to some degree, they're obviously having to make some decisions and choices. But yeah, it's like there was obvious, you know, like that should have been Rick. You know, there's also like that should have been Andrea because she is still alive, you know, but she died off way at the beginning, you know, like way earlier. So they're, and Carl, because you know, the whole thing was basically Rick and Carl. So yeah, they're definitely doing some adjustments, and there are definitely like this would have been a Rick moment, and it's not, so they have to give it to somebody else. But on that end, too, I don't think that we're, yeah, like what we saw this week. I think, you know, was the big setup of just the Commonwealth of like giving us the information like, oh, yes, this is not a perfect place. You know, oh, there's this caste system. Obviously, that's going to be like not, you know, a good thing and an issue. So, I mean, they'll hopefully, yeah, they only have so much time left, you know, that they need to wrap up certain storylines and get into the bigger things. Cause,
yes, they do.
Yeah. So I'm not expecting them to draw it out because they've, like I said, you know, this is still the part two of part three, which is an extended, right, you know, season of a normal thing. But, you know, they've got to wrap this up and get us to like that ending because we want to know what that ending is. Rick Grime, we already know, Andrew Lincoln, that he was seen in Atlanta. We brought that up last week.
Yep.
So we know he's going to probably show up, but it's more than likely going to be probably at the end. Like he's not going that whole storyline would then start really kind of coming into, you know, it's like the Commonwealth was like, this is kind of like what the comic book plot, you know, like our scenery was. And so to bring Brick back and then you're bringing in the CRM, which watching World Beyond, which is set, well, we don't know exactly where.
I would say before all of this.
Well, right. We just don't know how close or how, you know, like soon, but we brought that up.
Right.
Was like, okay, how would they not know who the Commonwealth is if they're existing kind of in the same realm area? Like,
and they have helicopters.
Yeah. And then, you know, and with where Rick is, we know he's been taken away. So it's like the Commonwealth, you know, it's here now that we're seeing, but then the CRM is still around. You know, it's like, but did they retreat or like, are they smaller than they were or like what? So yeah, I don't know.
It would be nice if somebody actually had a timeline.
Yeah. To help put all this through, because they exist at this point together. So it's like, that's for sure. Cause Rick is basically the connection there.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Renee. I'll go into your feedback that was on the Facebook group, and you said, I was not too happy with this episode. I'm just not feeling this Commonwealth storyline. It reminds me too much of the Governor and Mayberry, which reminds me that Rick is not on the show anymore. Crying face, crying face. I need nonstop action because lately I've been really missing Rick, and I just do not have the same excitement on Sundays like I used to have. I feel like a lot of the plots would have been much better if it was Rick and not the other actors or actresses. Man, I'm telling you, this Commonwealth crap has to pick up the pace so I can get some understanding on why, after all we have been through, why we wouldn't get the heck on with this Andy Griffin mess. I see Maggie didn't fall for the okie dokie. I roll. You know, if I think of anything else that I might have missed, I will give you a call. And you did. Peace and love. Heart emoji. Yep. Agree.
Okay. Yep. Thank you so much. All right. Well, we've got some feedback from Dieta from Detroit. And she starts off by saying, overall, okay episode, nothing awesome happened. Spent most of the time trying to figure out how the Commonwealth works. If you got higher up skills or degrees, you're considered upper class and get better jobs. Carol works at a bakery. A nice return to her, I'm such a clumsy homebody, pay me no mind. I love it. She puts on the best undercovers. She says Connie's a reporter now, with Kelly at her side as a translator. Daryl and Rosita are training to be stormtroopers. Ezekiel is an animal handler. Yumiko, in her new job as a lawyer, is part of the upper class and has dragged her brother against his will back into that world with her big mouth. She says Princess runs a record store and Magna is catering staff. Okay. And she goes, Magna is operating way below her skill level. The Commonwealth is repeating some of the worst mistakes of previous communities surrounded by the undead. By any sane assessment, half our people should have gotten like day labor duties, construction, farming, guard duty, foraging. These are the building blocks of post-apocalyptic society and survival. Some are more equal than others based off of financial class oppression at its finest. Says Carol's storyline was the most intriguing because Carol is kick-ass and fun to watch, sneaking around and cutting mysterious deals. She goes, hopefully we get answers sooner than later. Is there something sinister going on in the Commonwealth? Which of our people are going to join the resistance first? It's only a matter of time before battle lines are drawn, and I can't wait to watch the dominoes fall. I wish we had a little more information on how we got from here to there. That time jump leaves so much out. None of our people were terribly thrilled about the Commonwealth, so why is everyone suddenly playing house? Chin scratch. Guess we'll have to wait and see. And, of course, Renee responded to that by saying, great assessment, hug emojis, of our people, but it's my belief it's all a ruse. There's no way in hell Rosita or Daryl have fallen for this classism mess. Our peeps are too smart, and I'm hoping Mercer's sexy self is part of the resistance, clearly. Magna has already fallen in with the resistance. I think Stephanie Max is part of the resistance as well because she whispered, I'm just like you, to Tyler, or maybe she just meant she was lower class like him. Eye rolls. I tell you what, they better get to moving and grooving because I was definitely not feeling this episode. Also, my church is getting ready to start our church-wide fast. It starts tomorrow on Ash Wednesday and goes on till Easter Sunday, so I will not be interacting with you guys on social media. I give social media up along with several other things, so I will be doing call-ins only. See you guys Easter Sunday, and she waves. And, of course, Dieta responds back, says, I agree this episode was very lackluster after the debut. Okay, we'll be listening for the voicemails. And she's got a big smile and a lovey face.
All right, well, I'll do the next two. But Alma from Sacramento, and she says, I thought Jerry and family dressed up like tigers was cute. I'm not liking Daryl and Rosita being soldiers, and the Commonwealth reminds me of Woodbury, and we all know nothing good came out of there. With Renee responding, exactly, facepalm. Yep, nothing ever happens good with any community, really, in this the ZA. It's like, They all have their problems. They fall and you move on to the next one.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Glenn is from Toronto. She says, whispers of Alexandra with the Commonwealth Walker hunt, especially since Daryl and Judith have killed the real deal. It isn't entertainment for them, but pure survival. These Commonwealth citizens have no idea what really lies outside those walls like Aiden and company did, playing with the walkers when they were outside the walls of Alexandria. It's a laugh that Daryl and Rosita are being trained to then qualify and be incorporated into the Commonwealth's army. It should really be the other way around, as Daryl and Rosita are already qualified walker killers. Agreed. Like I said, they should be like special forces, not like new recruits. All right, she goes on. It's the humans you have to be more careful around more than the walkers or rotters, as the Walking Dead saying goes, kill the dead, fear the living. The setup in the Commonwealth is all based on class and threat of punishment if people don't toe the line. A dictatorship posing as democracies. Pamela Milton governs with the impression of toughness, but it is anything but. Has she purposely split up the survivors into different levels within the community to keep them divided? Daryl, Judith, and RJ in a stark and bare apartment, sitting on the floor eating food out of Tupperware. Carol, a baker, and looks to be in a respectable apartment with at least a settee and kitchen nook. Magna is a waitress, Connie a reporter, Yumiko a lawyer, or whatever, and her brother back to being a doctor after being thrown in jail because of his association with Eugene and Yumiko did with the radio comms they made, and Judith made to look wanting as she has no money, let alone an allowance. The Mercer cosplay kid won 10 lottery tickets, so back again to the old world where everybody is judged on how much money you have, what job you have, etc. She goes on, Pamela Milton is also probably to blame for how her son turned out. An opinionated, spoiled brat that thinks he can lord it over anyone because of who his mom is. Sebastian has achieved nothing on his own, and I hope he has the same fate as Alden did, as he's dangerous with his arrogance and ignorance. It's cringeworthy how he treats both Mercer and Daryl. Both could crush him like an inconsequential fly. Yeah, I know, murderous thoughts, but I do not like this guy at all. And don't worry, we're all in agreement with that. he's like just basically like a big red shirt on, and not like being like, oh, he's a good red shirt. He's just like, he's destined to be killed. At least Deanna with Aiden at Alexandra wasn't wearing rose-colored glasses and told him off when he confronted Glenn about killing those walkers that they, Aiden and Nicholas, kept as sort of pets to taunt.
Yep.
Sebastian, put those weapons of Judas' sword, Magna's axe, Daryl's crossbow down at once. Alexandria also took the survivors' weapons away from them, and look what happened there. Carol, I think you need to rustle up some stash of guns as it looks as if you're all disarmed again and baking cookies. Carol, at her most dangerous when baking and making plans under her false persona, Lance Hornsby doesn't know who he's dealing with, a master manipulator. He sure met his match. Shouldn't be too long before Ezekiel is right at the top of this list for that needed operation. We hope so, for sure. And yes, Hornsby doesn't know who he's talking to.
No, he does not.
Granted, you know, they made it an easy walk in the park with her on some of the, like, getting in the hospital. But yeah, that's Carol's thing. And I thought it was interesting, too, that whenever she brought the wine to Hornsby, and, like, he was like, oh, like, how did you know? And she's like, her mother always taught her to be observant. And it's like, yes, exactly. Like, she definitely pays attention to details, listens, and all that stuff, and uses it whenever she needs to. So it's like, Lance, you better watch out. She goes on. She says, the riffraff, so to speak, lined up outside the red carpet to catch a glimpse of the honored guests arriving at the party as if they were at the Oscars or something. Back to the ordinary, normal world without walkers roaming around, but there's a strain undercurrent running just under the surface which that disgraced soldier has managed to bring to the surface. I wonder what his punishment will be now that he's effectively committed treason. He revealed the hidden content that has been festering and brought it out into the open for all to see. Pamela Milton is going to want to put that back quick into Pandora's box. I expect this is where Maggie comes in and may side with the opposition, and maybe Daryl was just playing a role when he was stationed outside Hilltop confronting Maggie in that 6 month time jump. Yep, you make lots of good points, Glynnis. We covered some of those, but it's like, yeah, we just don't know what is going on with the 6 month time jump, although we kind of can kind of put into hopefully that it's not an actual true, like Daryl's on one side, Maggie's on the other. It just seems like there's probably going to be something that Maggie, like something Maggie has that the Commonwealth wants. And I don't know what that could be. Could it be some Commonwealth fugitives that she lets in? Or does she, yeah, like, are she she holding Sebastian hostage for some reason?
Right. Or is it some natural resource? Is it, you know, what is it?
Yes, that is true. Actually, that's a good point. It could be something that... They're at the Hilltop, which I thought was interesting, that I was like, okay, I thought Hilltop was kind of abandoned. They went back to Hilltop to go get supplies to bring back to Alexandria. So it's kind of like, well, I guess with Alexandria, I guess basically in ruins, they go back to the Hilltop to basically rebuild it. And maybe they don't know about the Hilltop. So I don't know. That's kind of bringing up some interesting thoughts about like, well, is Maggie in hiding? You know, and then Daryl kind of either gets, you know, somehow convinced to tell them the Commonwealth, and then that's why he's there to, like, go get her or something like that. So, I don't know. Interesting stuff. All right. Thank you, Glynnis. That was all of our listeners' feedback, and so we can go into our own. I don't know if you had anything really more to add. And I kind of... I'm just kind of summing. I have a couple things with just basically just like what other people said.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I thought it was interesting. Pamela Milton like asked Hornsby like if there were thousands of unhappy citizens whenever a soldier boy basically like shouts out to everybody, you know, and says, there's thousands of us, but, you know, don't, you know, live this lie, blah, 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 whatever he said. You know, and then she's all like, are there actually thousands? And of course, you know, Lance is like, no, he's like, no, there's not. It's like, it's not true. But it was kind of thinking like, and I think we've said this before and, you know, previous episodes or whatever, that it was kind of like, okay, who's really pulling the strings in this community? And we kind of know that's like, okay, Lance is like the one that's actually out there managing the Commonwealth. And right. Pamela is kind of this there as the figurehead and having her parties and doing other stuff. So it was interesting to see her being like, wait, like, so like she's like, oh, she doesn't know like what's going on in her own community. Like she's too busy being the politician. And then Lance is the one that's actually, you know, pulling the strings. So,
well, it's kind of like she's the president. So she does a lot of policy things and does a lot of things like that, but Hornsby's more like the Secretary of State or, you know, some high level cabinet member, that he's the one that's actually doing stuff. And she says, you know, it'd be a wonderful idea if we do X. And so he's the one that goes out and actually makes it happen.
Happen, right. Yeah.
Because, like with the party, I'm sure she said, oh, it would be really nice if we could get, some. Like this particular wine, because, you know, that was, you know, it'd be nice to have a good red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's the one that has to go out and scavenge and find it.
Well, no, right, right. And just having that kind of a setup definitely is going to be putting her on, you know, like, and someone that could be easily, you know, thrown out, you know, out of power and a takeover. And then the other part, I don't know, it's just like, I thought it was interesting and I didn't get to really go back to like look at it, you know, like more specifically, like to what was going on. But it was like after the party and it looked like Yumiko was like making people sign something, whatever, but within handing some of the guests of the party, like envelopes of money. And so I was like, oh, like, are these people getting an allowance? Are they like, you know, like, are they be like, were they getting some gift for like showing up? Was it like, you know, what was going on? I don't know what was happening, but like there was money being given to these people and they were guests of the party.
It's also maybe they'll explain what the significance of the lottery tickets are. Would it be to get into the party? Is it like some other, you know, fabulous take home prize?
That's true. But yeah, it was just whatever. Some people were getting money and they were guests of the party when they were leaving. But then that also like then started reminding me is like what Brian was saying back in what episode 2, Acheron part 2. And there was that briefcase of money that Daryl saw in the subway. And then we know that this, you know, currency is something that the Commonwealth is using because everybody's getting allowances and using, you know, dollars. And when they were catching people, like you, or whenever our group got, you know, kind of captured, interrogated, you know, it's like they found, saw that whatever, like the, they pulled all the cash from everybody. So like they're controlling currency. So it's like in, yeah, we saw that Daryl saw that in the subway. And so, yeah, okay. What's a way to kind of destabilize something? It's like he could flood the Commonwealth with more currency that's not being controlled.
Right.
So I don't know. We could see that now. So it was kind of, there was a point of seeing that, that, you know, that many episodes ago. So I don't know. We'll see. I could see that be something that is being, you know, that shows up that is cause some trouble in this wonderful world.
Yes, we will.
All right. Well, that's all I had to ramble about. So let's go into our news ratings and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
All right. All right. The ratings for The Walking Dead season 11, episode 10 this week are a 0.41 in 1849 with 1.604 million viewers. In the 25 to 54, it was a 0.76, and 50 plus was a 0.99. Those were actually like higher in the 25, 54, and 50 plus, but lower in the 1849, which last week's season 11, episode 9 got a 0.53 in the 1849 with 1.756 million viewers, 0.69 in 25, 54, and 0.85 in the 50 plus. So it got more viewers, but the rating was, or no, less viewers. So it was more, you know, more viewers last week than it was this week. So a little bit of a drop. There's so much going on in the world and like in DVR. So I don't know if
that's true.
And weren't the Oscars on, or not the Oscars, the Screen Actors Guild Awards? What was on last Sunday?
It may have
been
something. It was something.
Yeah, it was one of the award shows, viewer's choice.
I'm gonna say some Hollywood self-referential pat yourselves on the back.
Yep, they love to give themselves awards. All right. Well, Talking Dead this week actually, you know, was a little lower too. Season 11, episode 10 of The Talking Dead got a 0.18 in the 1849 with 662,000 viewers. And then the week before, season 11, episode 9 got a 0.21 in the 1849 with 760,000 viewers. I'm not going to do the parrots because I actually cut it out of last week's episode because I realized we were just like giving the parrots from way back in October. And I went to go look up the ones for this week and they still hadn't been updated. So I'm going to work on that. And I will bring back an updated, well, I'll just try to get them all covered in next week's episode. So we will just pass over that for this week.
Cause we want to know if SpongeBob is still the number one show.
I'm pretty sure some it is, but it's, yeah, we'll just cover it next week and I can get all the correct numbers. All right. On to news. There wasn't like a whole lot of news. I scoured and if there was something that was like last minute in the last day or two, but, what I did come across was like AMC announced six more additions to the cast of the anthology series Tales of the Walking Dead with Olivia Munn, Danny Ramirez, Lone Chabal, I don't know how to, Lone Chabano, Imbeth Davids, and Jesse T. Usher, and Gage Monroe, all set to feature in episodes of the upcoming zombie spinoff. So, and it went on actually says Olivia, Danny, Joan, Imbeth, and Jesse and Gage are the latest massive talent that they will bring new worlds to The Walking Dead to life with big, daring, different, emotional, shocking, scary, and crazy stories, said executive producer of The Walking Dead, Chief Content Officer Scott M. Gimple. We're excited for them to come walk with us. Tales of The Walking Dead will consist of 6 one-hour episodes, each focusing on a different characters set within the world of The Walking Dead universe. And these newest additions join previously announced cast members Anthony Edwards, Parker Posey, Terry Crews, Poppy Liu, and Jillian Bell. So yeah, they're beefing up the cast for just these 6 episodes for this anthology series. So
wow,
yeah, that's
a lot of big names.
Yeah, and it just I'm excited too because it's like this is not going to be based on. Like, it's looking like it's not going to have any of our original characters. They could do that. So, I don't know if this is just going to be completely on the OHM deal. And it's curious, like, is this going to be, start of apocalypse, middle, end? It's like, where are they going to, do with these stories? Because it just seems with this kind of a cast, they could do all sorts of stuff. So, I guess we'll just have to wait to see, but it makes this exciting to see this, when it does roll out, when that is. All right. Well, that was all the news that I had to bring. So, LT, you want to tell people how to interact with us?
Well, we want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Walking Dead TTM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/walkingdeadTTM. You can send us email. That's walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. You can also use the feedback form on our website. That's talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can call area code 216-232-6146. Remember, they cap out at about 2 minutes. Also, all of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Those videos go out first before the podcast does.
All right. To support us, like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. The best way you can support us is in our Patreon, and you can find that at patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. And of course, we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Renee Murray, Lawrence Todd, guy over there.
Hello.
Kyle McAdams, me, and Dieta Patterson. Remember that Dieta, Clint, and Renee will be getting an early version of the episode this week. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast client of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. And you can also leave us a review on podchaser.com. And there you can actually rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. And as always, remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them or tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to get us new listeners. All right. Brian and Ruthie are covering Star Trek Discovery right now. Star Trek Discovery podcast.com, and starting this week, which will also be covering Star Trek Picard, so they're going to be busy. And you can find that also at startrekpicard.com. Oh, and did we mention that this move got postponed again and that he's also moving this week? That is why he is not here with us today. Go check them out over the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/StarTrekTTMpodcast. And they also have a Patreon for those podcasts. You can find that at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And yes, we're there with Brian. He's been having to do a lot. So hopefully he's going to get his move going and, can get through the Picard and, Discovery overlap.
Yep.
So, all right. Next week, covering The Walking Dead Season 11, Episode 11, titled Rogue Element, written by David Leslie, Johnson McGoldrick, directed by Michael Kudlitz. And the description from AMC Plus is, Eugene looks for Stephanie after she mysteriously goes missing. Connie investigates a story on Trooper Davis. Carol helps Hornsby with a labor dispute at a drug farm. All right, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time, I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everyone.
Good night.